I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
Sutton's, suppliers of gardening products since 1806, sponsor the Plant-Based Podcast. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
I feel very at home today, sitting in a polytunnel full of plants, and Hannah Claxton from Eves Hill Veg Co, which is where we are. Hi, Hannah. There's also a baby behind us, baby Gloria, yeah. Who's currently sleeping.
She's currently asleep.
But if you hear any noise, then, you know, it's the baby.
She may join in shortly.
It's not the plants crying. And we're actually in a makeshift studio of sorts, because trying to record in a polytunnel meant the sound was a bit off. So Hannah has very expertly surrounded us by trays and sedums in order to keep the sound in.
You'll definitely need a photo of this, though. It's probably our most unusual podcast setup.
It is, but I'm really quite enjoying it. It's also very intimate. We're all very close. But anyway, so Eves Hill Veg Co, thanks for having us today, Hannah.
Pleasure. Thank you for coming.
I've been here before, of course. I showed No Fear Gardening around, so I know a little bit about the place, but tell our listeners all about it.
Okay, so we're a 2-acre market garden. We're on rented farmland in North Norfolk. We grow vegetables, which we sell locally to restaurants, and we have a veg bag scheme. People come and collect their produce from us. But we also have an ethos which is around enabling people to have access to a land-based project and skills, and we try and open up the site for people to come. So we run a volunteer program on a Wednesday, and we have people come and learn, and we have open days for the public to come and get involved, bring their kids, see what we're doing, see the techniques that we're using, and we're trying to just share our space with others.
But you're very much about community here, aren't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we want to create a project where people can feel a bit more connected to where their food comes from, and understand that there are ecological techniques that can be used to grow food. Mm-hmm. And techniques that can increase the kind of productivity from your home garden scale to being able to go beyond this idea of self-sufficiency and to more the idea of feeding your local community. Yeah. So that's what we're really interested in. We're not about self-sufficiency, we're about, yes, sharing skills that you can take home and use in your garden or your allotment, yeah, but that you can also use to be more productive and mm-hmm. share food and produce with others.
Yeah, that's not, it's nice, and it's important, and going forward over the years it could be essential.
Yeah, well, we think it is, and we
is
think
now.
Yeah, we think it is now. We think, you know, I wouldn't say so. I'm part of a kind of wider movement of kind of new generation and some older generation growers who are kind of going beyond where the kind of organic farming movement went to say, we want food that's grown ecologically, we want people to grow that food to work in safe and fairly paid environments, we want to be able to pass those skills to others, and we want those skills to develop and move forwards. And this kind of movement in the UK at the moment is kind of under the umbrella of Land Workers Alliance.
Yeah.
And Land Workers Alliance is about not just sharing those skills with others and with each other to build a stronger network of farmers and growers and producers, but also kind of lobbying the government to say, what are you doing about food production in this country? What are you doing about ecology in farming in this country? What are you doing about research? What are you doing about getting new, younger entrants into food production? What are you doing about training people in horticulture, in productive horticulture? And actually making it our business to ask these questions about who is going to grow our food in the future? How's it going to be grown? And so we very much see this project as part of that wider...
Part of that wider kind of sphere of growing food.
You're effectively offering the only market gardening course as well in the UK, is that right?
Not in the UK, no. Uh-huh.
In Norfolk.
But pretty so unique, right, what you're offering here as a course?
If you wanted to study market gardening in the, in the UK, there isn't really a college or a university you can go to learn that. There are brilliant places like Organically Community Growers in London that run a level 2 City and Guilds horticulture, which is tailored to learn the skills of market gardening. There are brilliant projects, mostly in the West Country, where if you're willing to quit your life and your job and your family, that you can go and live there for a year. I mean, a bit like I did. I went and worked for a year and did an apprenticeship on a farm in Herefordshire in order to learn my trade. There are ways of learning those skills. But what we're trying to do here with our traineeship, which is a voluntary, what we call a work education exchange, and with our apprenticeship, which is a paid position, is to offer people the opportunity to see a whole growing season, live in their homes, live in their communities, and learn hands-on about productive market gardening. And we really invest in the kind of training side of that. Like, we don't want to see volunteering as something that is like, oh great, people just come and barrow for us for free. It's that's not what we're interested in at all. We're interested in having more people do the work we're doing and more people who are skilled up to be able to do the kind of work we're
doing. It's so important. It's a fantastic project. You've been going for three years, did you say?
2.5 years. We've done 3 growing seasons. And I mean, for example, when we started our apprenticeship, which is a paid apprenticeship, we met with somebody who ran horticulture apprenticeships in East Anglia, who was able to tell us that there are only 6 horticulture apprenticeships in East Anglia currently, of which none of them are in productive horticulture, and that includes farm-scale food growing, not just kind of market gardening or walled food gardening in stately homes. The government pulled the plug on the apprenticeship for productive horticulture.
Bad government.
Which is kind of saying we don't want food growers. And obviously there's the garden scale and there's the farm scale. But either way, we've got a government that are saying we don't want to invest in the training of the next generation.
How will we feed everybody? You know, we have a growing population and there's loads of stats by, 2050, there's some, record number of people on the planet. How are we going to feed them if people don't understand or are able to grow food?
Well, my understanding of where the government sits on this, and I'm not an expert and I can hook you in with amazing people at Landmarkers Alliance who are doing such amazing work on this. But my understanding is that the government, in a free market economy, believes that the market will look after us and that food will just come from further afield. And in order to make food from further afield cheaper, we're talking about importing food that probably has very little or no regulation around the food growing techniques, the use of dangerous chemicals and pesticides, labour conditions. So along with the kind of pushing out our pollution and pushing out our kind of ecological injustice, you're also pushing out the social injustices to let another country deal with it and let another government maybe not deal with it, and so that we can have cheaper food flown in and our government doesn't have to worry about whether we're producing food or not in this country. And that's certainly more and more becoming the kind of the policy, and as we move towards Brexit, that seems to be the policy that the government are moving towards.
So
which is, you know, not just
question.
Which is, you know, not just sad for people like me that are passionate about about growing food, and farm-scale horticulturalists who are passionate about growing food. But it's also sad for us because it means we're losing the contact with what we're eating and where it's coming from and the impact that is having.
It's just brought up a question in my mind, and that's there's a lot going on about, trying to encourage people to eat more plants as part of their diet. And maybe not meat or not as much meat, if any, because obviously farming or agricultural animal farming is a huge problem with climate conditions, climate change and that kind of thing. And as a vegan, I'm always reading and promoting the fact that if you eat less meat, if you think about the population going forward, then we will need more plants. We will need more crops for people's diets. But how does that work if there's not enough people to grow the crops or understand it?
I think it's a really important question in the vegan movement.
Yeah.
I think I had a group from the UEA come out here last year, international development students, and there was a few of them that were vegan campaigners, and the conversation got onto the politics of vegan food. And I just quite simply was saying to them, if you want to reduce the impact of your diet on the planet, you need to think about the climate that you live in, the soil that you live on, and the food that's available to you from your surrounding area.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are just impacting on the climate by flying in your avocados,
your
coconut milk,
couldn't agree more.
Quinoa. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be eating those things. I love an avocado. I'm not righteous in that way, but I'm saying in terms of building a rural economy, we live in Norfolk.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful rural farmland. And yet you ask anybody in any village in Norfolk, you know, what that land over there is used for, where that food ends up, there's such a disconnect. And yet we could be having jobs and a thriving rural economy based on land-based...
Yeah, land-based work. I couldn't agree
whether more. Whether that's growing grapes to make wine or hops to make beer or vegetables to you know, eat in your kitchen. And, you know, economically, it has just got harder and harder and harder and harder in this country to farm and grow food. And there is every reason for every farmer and food grower to just give up and say, I can't do it anymore. When, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you could... I would be able to go to a bank and get a mortgage on a farm.
Yeah.
And I would be able to become a farmer if I wanted to, based on a conversation with a bank manager.
Yeah. Wow. And now times have changed very much.
There is no economic sum that would allow me, as a farmer or a food producer, to get a mortgage and buy land or buy...
You are clearly very passionate and knowledgeable. Mm. But where did it all begin for you in the first place?
I had a very different life working in the music industry, and when I quit that, I...
Hence our sound box.
Yes.
Were you a pop star?
I wasn't a pop star. I wasn't a sound engineer. Right? And when I quit that, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I just needed a bit of space. I needed space in every sense. And I was really... I think climate change and environmental degradation was a really big question, and I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, how do I engage with this massive question?
So were you looking at it almost as an antidote to the life that you were having then? Perhaps?
And so I started volunteering at Market Garden, thinking, well, whatever happens, this will be a skill that, you know, hopefully one day I'll have a garden or an allotment and I can grow some veg for myself. I'll never regret having that skill.
Yeah.
And it gradually just took hold with the quiet and the nature and the plants and the colours and the insects. I mean, I had a love affair with cabbage white butterflies and I didn't know what they were. And obviously for anyone who grows cabbages, you know,
it's
not so much fun. But when you first walk into a garden and it's just buzzing with insects and bees and butterflies and life and energy, you know, I just fell in love.
It's that connection, isn't it? Yeah. It's that connection that we have of nature that we've spoken
and
about so often.
And seasons as well. I remember sitting at my desk in an office looking at the tree outside the window going, I have no idea what time of year it is. I have no idea what the weather is like outside. And then suddenly to be in a garden where you feel every day the season and the next season that's coming and what's emerging and, you know, the little peas behind you that are popping up and the daffodils that are appearing and you notice every new leaf emergent. You know, I'm watching that rhubarb grow every day at the moment.
I love that.
It's addictive because you want to come back the next day and see that rhubarb. You want to come the next day and then next day and the next day and then you want to harvest it and then you want to cook it, and then it clicked with my obsession with food and eating and then it became a bigger thing. And then mixed in with that, I ended up going to India to anybody who knows about Vandana Shiva, who's a climate and environmental activist, and specifically around women's issues.
Okay.
and got kind of was like fascinated by the idea that gardening and food growing could be linked to feminism and women's issues. And so I ended up going and staying on her farm for a few months and having this kind of big opening up and realization about the links between food and diet, mm-hmm. food and health food and climate change food, and you know, and then was very privileged to be able to take that time to really learn and really understand and really
is that where you learned your horticultural practices then? Where
did I'd you say that's more up? Where the politics came.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And then from there decided, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be a woman who mm-hmm. who grows food. And so then from there, I spent a year with an amazing gardener farmer called Jane Scotter, who in Herefordshire, a farm called Fernbarrow. And that's where I really kind of dug my heels in with a 60-hour working week.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And learned how to grow vegetables. Uh-huh. And not just grow them, but really grow them for kind of to a refined, exquisite mm-hmm. kind of standard of flavour mm-hmm. and colour and taste. And
and amongst a part of all of this is, you know, obviously everything here is organic. So where did that come into your training and learning?
I mean, officially, we're not organic.
Okay.
We're not certified. To say you're organic as a food producer, you need to go through a certification process, quite rightly. You know, if you're going to use a logo and sell a product and say that it is organic, you have to go through that process. We can't afford that process as a small scale grower. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive. And it has made the kind of organic certification thing kind of a little bit exclusive. I'm very passionate about organic techniques and what organic is. What I have learned from being back in Norfolk is not many people are interested in that. And I have had this privileged period in my life to really understand why organic is important. But to most people, it's a thing that is marketed to them as a luxury that they can't afford.
Really?
And I think it's really important to acknowledge that it's off-putting. Organic can be off-putting to people. And actually, I think the conversation we need to be having more is that we can't afford to not work in ecological ways anymore.
Yeah,
we can't afford to damage our soils any further. You know.
But it's getting that word out there. It's educating people, isn't it? And that's so hard to do, to spread the word.
Well, it is. And, you know, most people are gardeners and they've gardened for, you know, a lot of people have gardened for many years. They have their techniques and they work for them.
Mm.
And they don't really want to change. And there's no reason to change them. And what's really interesting for us is that most of the people who come here to experience and to learn and to try something different, most of them are kind of under the age of 35.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't have gardens. A lot of them are in the housing crisis of, you know, rented flats, and if they've got a few pots, they're lucky. And yet they still have that real longing for a garden or a bit of land to call their own. And so we're kind of working with a kind of younger, more people who are at the beginning of their gardening journeys.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Or people who want to step up their gardening skills to be more productive. And so, in a way, the way we teach here is this is just normal gardening.
Do you think the younger generation are more interested in being, they're more conscious about the, you know, climate change and the planet and sustainability and
definitely
that?
Yeah. And you know, and we use, you know, organic seeds and organic compost, and we make a lot of our own compost, and we use organic pest management, and we use a lot of no-dig gardening techniques to build the soil biology.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, not a lot of this is very different from how our grandparents and great-grandparents were gardening,
yeah.
you know, 50, yeah. 80 years
yes,
ago.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's only really in the last 50 mm-hmm. years that things mm-hmm. have changed. I'm not saying there isn't room to develop and move techniques forward. There definitely is, and we need to be much savvier
yeah.
in the future. I'm not saying we need to go mm-hmm. backwards. But in a way, sometimes the organic thing confuses people, because a lot of the gardening techniques, like making compost, well, if you're a gardener, you make compost.
You make compost, mm. yeah. Yeah, quite. I learned all of my organic gardening practices from my uncle when I was tiny. He was always organic gardener. Yeah. He never used any pesticides, herbicides, nothing. He was all, you know, that's how it was.
I mean, if you make compost, you don't need any chemical-based plant food. Mm. You are then building a soil, you know, in a biological, ecological way and increasing diversity beyond the soil because obviously it has a knock-on impact for birds and insects.
Yeah.
And if you are growing a lot of different things and you enjoy and you love gardening and you're celebrating kind of the diversity of crops and that you can grow, then pest management is really, and weed management is not. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal to not use chemicals or pesticides or herbicides. Yeah.
I agree. I think we should find out a little bit more in the second part of the podcast about techniques people can use in their own gardens.
And try and grow the best flavoured veg, but in the easiest way as well.
Yeah.
And cheapest too.
Yes.
So it's really inspiring to see what Hannah has created at Eaves Hill, isn't it? Like from nothing, just a field to an organic market farm.
Yeah, and I hadn't quite realised before the importance of having to improve the soil because, of course, over the years, the soil gets depleted. And I think back to when my dad was growing vegetables, it's like he was never having that impressive harvest or anything. So I know that he wasn't necessarily improving the soil. So that kind of...
Yeah.
Seems to make sense because, of course, it does tire over the years.
But that's with any kind of growing, isn't it? Mm. We all want lovely, beautiful flowers and fruits and vegetables, but without the soil and knowing what you're planting in the correct soil, you won't reap the reward, will you? So
for sure, yeah.
You know, Hannah learnt from that failure, so she started to sow as soon as she took over that land and nothing grew. And so she realised that then, of course, she needed to... really work the soil and feed it and now implements the no dig approach.
Yeah, definitely. And it's weird to talk to her and kind of say, oh, well, I feel like organic is the new normal. But of course she's like, well, organic has always been the normal.
Yeah.
But we're so conditioned to using chemicals that, it's weird that we then are going back to an organic way, which is actually
the normal
way. Kind of should be. Do you know what I mean?
So, I don't use chemicals. I'm an organic gardener. And... Mm. That's not without its difficulties, for sure, but I don't understand why anybody would want to use chemicals in a garden, or especially around edible food.
It's that quick fix attitude, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, somebody did actually say that's the lazy fix, because, yes, it might be the quick fix, but part of gardening is getting down and dirty, if you like. So weeding and, you know, it's hard work sometimes, but actually you reap the rewards again of, like, getting involved. And I've had bindweed problems on my old allotment for years. Drove me crazy, and I could have easily used a chemical approach, but I didn't. I just kept on weeding. And you have to get your head around that as an organic gardener, I think.
Yeah, that it can be hard work at times.
It can be hard work, but I would rather that than use something that's detrimental to the environment, to people, and, of course, to wildlife, bees.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your own health. It
to
seems
your own
really
health
stupid
as well,
to use a chemical that could be harming you yourself.
Yeah, and Hannah at the farm has shown just what can be produced from organic gardening.
Mm. And you can see that it works, and she's helping others to find out about it as well.
Absolutely. Very passionate.
Okay, in part two, we're going to look at what you can grow at home and how you can grow organically. And more importantly, we're going to open up the big question of the difference between growing in an organic and non-organic way and how that can affect not just the crops, but the way you feel about the crops that you're growing too. So that's going to open that up with you now, Hannah, the differences between organic and non-organic.
So for me, the non-organic bit is the thing that's different.
Mm.
And that's the bit where you have to go to a shop and spend money and buy an input that costs you money and that you have to add to your growing, so a pesticide or a herbicide, and obviously that's the thing that's going to have a negative impact on the biodiversity of your soil and of the wildlife, the insects, the bees, the butterflies around you.
So we're almost switching up here what is normal, what is defined as normal.
I'm trying to say that what's normal is to not use those things and not spend your money on things that actually you're being sold as something that's going to help you in the short term. It's going to kill your weeds, or it's going to feed your plants, or it's going to kill not just the insect you're trying to kill, but actually all the insects in your garden. And I'm saying that those are the things that are not normal. And so if you take them away, what you're left with is normal gardening.
That makes total sense, doesn't it?
It makes sense, but people do not see it that way, do they? No.
And it's, you know, why spend your money on a plant food when you can put your kitchen waste in a compost heap and make beautiful compost? And, you know, gardeners know about compost. I mean, that's normal stuff.
Yeah.
And gardeners know the more compost you put on the soil, the more worms you see and the more insects you have. And, you know, we know that when we see an owl, we cheer because they're eating our mice. We have the lovely barn owl that's just appeared here in the last week, which is really exciting. and we have a vole problem. So hooray for the barn owls. Yeah. We know you know, anybody who spends time in the garden, they know about these things. These are not new ideas.
Yeah. But how do we stop, you know, the quick fix of just using a pesticide on our plants? What are the other options? And are they such a quick fix?
I mean, they're not really a quick fix because then they're so indiscriminate. You know, they won't just kill the insect that you're trying to kill. They will kill everything.
Like humans,
so people need to bear this in mind.
Humans do. It's not just the things around it. It's,
So you want to kill an aphid, but you're actually going to end up killing the ladybirds that are feeding on the aphids, and you're going to end up killing whatever was feeding on the ladybirds.
So it ends up being really stupid, isn't it, to be honest?
And that's not even going into the kind of research and data around the impact of pesticides on us and the links to cancers and infertility problems and et cetera, and they're, you know, go and find a website for Pesticide Watch and look up that data.
Is there a difference with crops growing organically and non-organically? Do you see a difference in how much you can harvest?
So there's a brilliant thing. Like, I actually really, you know, I don't want to sound antagonistic to people who choose to use chemicals and pesticides, and particularly within the farming community, you know, they have been farming in an economy that has, they have to compete with their neighbours and other farmers and a farming industry that has an expectation that this is how you farm and these are people's livelihoods. So we are renting land on a non-organic farm, and I'm really fascinated by that, and I'm fascinated by the dialogue of how do all farmers and all gardeners move away from reliance on chemicals and pesticides and herbicides. Baby brain, forgotten your question.
Oh, because Gloria, remember everyone, there's a baby here. Hannah has just had a baby.
A very quiet baby.
A very quiet baby, but Hannah is allowed to have baby brain. Is there a difference in the harvest from organic and non-organic gardening?
Brilliant, thank you. So when we first started growing here and we took over land that had been farmed non-organically for about 50 years.
Yeah.
And the first year I was like, we'll just put a load of compost in and then we'll plant up the crops and then they'll grow. I just thought that's what would happen. And Robert, the farmer, a really wonderful, experienced farmer, kept driving past in his truck looking at me going, "They're not growing, Hannah. Your crops are not growing."
I shouldn't be laughing.
And then was like, "I've got some fertiliser in the shed, and would you, you know, if I were you, I'd get some on there quick because you're going to lose them." You know, sage advice from a very experienced farmer who's dependent on his crops for his livelihoods. And what's really interesting is I'd been teaching organic horticulture for like 3 or 4 years, and I suddenly realised I had to dig a bit deeper to understand why these crops weren't growing. And what I very quickly realised is that because this soil hadn't been grown using compost, using organic matter for 50 years, things had been taken out of the soil, but nothing had been returned, that what had happened is that the soil biology had basically died.
Gosh.
And if you have dead soil, which is just basically a growing medium, and then you're growing plants with the kind of steroids of nutrients that you apply, plants won't grow in the same way without those steroids. And so we basically had to backtrack and reintroduce soil biology into the soil. And that's where I got really obsessed by, if anybody is interested in this, Dr. Elaine Ingham, who is an amazing soil biologist in America, who will teach you how to make compost teas and reapply the kind of soil organisms to the soil that plants need to be able to have the uptake of nutrients that then enable them to grow.
Fascinating.
So we had to basically start again from scratch on this soil, which made me really interested in the idea that, yes, I mean, growing organically is different if you're starting on soil that is basically close to sterile in terms of soil biology. Yeah. Most gardeners and allotment growers are inheriting soil that's probably had a lot of compost added to it and is very alive. And therefore, the kind of growing, organic or non-organic, is, if you took away those plant foods and those things, there's very little difference.
So so your crops are now in abundance, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
And you you use the no-dig method here, is that right?
We do for about half of the site. There's a certain scale beyond which no-dig becomes quite difficult and your barrowing gets quite hard, and no-dig being you just put the compost on top of the soil and let the soil biology work it into the soil for you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we used it on about half the site.
And what are you growing? What are you growing here?
So the core of our kind of social enterprise business model is a mixed leaf cut and come again salad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got two polytunnels where we grow tomatoes and cucumbers. Mm-hmm. We've got a small area where we grow fast growing crops in succession. So either in succession with themselves or each other. So we try and get three crops a year in each of those beds. And then we have what we call our field area, which has kind of got standing crops like kale and beetroot and celeriac and crops that we can just pick when we need
it's
them.
It's like a huge allotment.
But it is, and it's, huge and it is still a garden. I mean, this is one of the things for me that's really important is I'm a gardener and I love gardening and I work with my hands and I work with hand tools, and what we teach here is gardening. And these are techniques and skills that people can use at home and in their garden or allotment or even in a pot. And yet we're kind of scaling it up so that it's very highly productive in a quite a small, we're in quite a small area.
And everything's grown to order as well, isn't it? So you're zero waste, you were telling us.
We harvest to order, so we don't harvest anything until it's already sold.
Harvest to order.
Yeah, which is really important in the kind of modern food system. And, you know, I think the statistic is that in farm-scale horticulture, 50% of produce is wasted by the time it gets onto people's plates, whether that's because they're wonky vegetables or they don't get sold, they sit on the supermarket shelf and end up in the bin or end up in somebody's fridge and not get used. So what we try and do is have a system where we pre-sell everything and then harvest it. So we, you know, I love the culture of market stalls, but we don't do market stalls because you would come home not knowing, you know, what you're going to sell.
And for people at home that are growing their own fruit and vegetables, are there some things that are better suited to organic growing, you know, perhaps easier vegetables to start with? What would you recommend?
I don't think that's any different from non-organic growing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any, I can't see that there would make any difference whatsoever. I think if you are, you know, the main difference as an organic gardener would be just caring for the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So making compost.
So that is really the key to everything. You can, what we're saying is you can grow anything you want to.
Anything you want.
As long as you're improving the soil.
As long as
first.
You're constantly improving the soil.
Because a lot of people out there probably think, oh, that looks too difficult to grow. I'd have to, you know.
But that would be the same whether you're organic or non-organic. You know, there are easy things to grow like courgettes and runner beans and beetroot and chard.
Okay.
And then there are things that are slightly more tricky to grow, like, you know, where you have to understand a little bit more about timings and temperatures and germination rates and that you kind of, you grow after you've been growing for a few years. But I don't think that's linked to whether you're organic or not.
So do you have any specific organic gardening tips for people at home? Like how can they get rid of pests and diseases, that kind of thing, if they're growing organic?
I mean, should I just give examples of what we do here?
Yeah, that would be
Is that the easiest way to do that?
Yeah, that would be perfect.
So, for example, with brassica crops, so our cabbages, our kales, we cover them with a very fine mesh called EnviroMesh, which you can get in garden centres. They call it insect netting. And that's just to stop flea beetle and cabbage white butterflies.
Those lovely cabbage white butterflies. Those lovely cabbage
butterflies from laying their caterpillar eggs. And that's sufficient enough to protect the brassica crops from problems. We have bird, hare and partridge problem here. And so for crops that are susceptible to them, so lettuces and some of the chards and beetroots, we just do use a netting.
Mm-hmm.
We, in terms of the kind of aphidy kind of problems, one of the, or like thunderflies, mm-hmm. thrips, we've had thrips mm-hmm. here. One of the things that we have kind of passionately believe in is to grow a lot of open flower heads, so kind of your marigolds and your cosmos, and just fill the garden with a lot of flowers. So at the end of every bed, mm-hmm. we will plant.
You're thinking about your companion plant.
Yeah, companion yeah. planting, but for beneficial insects.
Yeah.
And we've seen really positive results when we've had pest problems of bringing in the hoverflies mm. and the beneficial insects to deal with those.
What plants do you use? What flowers do
Any
you
flower
use?
That's got a very open head that hoverfly can land on. So
Why? A lot, usually there's lots of marigolds.
Marigolds are really great. Those, and the kind of calendula-style marigolds particularly. Yeah. And mm-hmm. cosmos.
Yeah. They look pretty too.
They look pretty and they're bright. And even in polytunnels, you know, the insects will find their way in. So we interplant our tomatoes with marigolds for that reason, because we had thrips problem one year.
And I've always grown spring onions amongst my carrots, because apparently that deters carrot root fly. Apparently,
does it work?
Yeah.
I've never had carrot root fly.
There you go. I mean, the other thing is
not try it in case I get it.
So. I mean, there's so many tips around carrots, and you know, I think all allotment growers have those kind of conversations about, you know, whatever techniques they use about, don't weed them at this time of day. And
mm-hmm. If it works for you, then it's like very
annoying. I mean, that's what's great about gardening is every year you try something else, don't you? And every year you ask another gardener for another tip. And every year you get excited by, I'm going to try and do it like that this year and see what happens. And some people have great success with carrots and some people will have terrible success with them.
Yeah.
That's just the fun of it.
It is, that's gardening.
I think... You know, one of the great things about market gardening is we grow about 30 different kinds of salad leaves, and we've probably got 40 or 50 different kinds of vegetables, let alone how many different cultivars. And so maybe one thing will, get caught out by that awful drought we had last year, and another thing will do really, really well. And maybe one thing will get caught out by aphids, but another thing will do really, really well.
Yeah.
And I think one of the joys of gardening is that nature is a little bit bigger than us, isn't it?
Just a bit.
It's also variable, though. People are often put off if something doesn't grow, but they forget the plants are a living thing.
Quite.
It's not going to perform the same for
everyone.
Not just
plants, but the weather and the conditions.
Yeah, exactly,
and every year is different.
But that's where a lot of people see that as their own failure, which is something that we're actively trying to convince people.
Absolutely.
It's not your fault. There are so many different things.
No, that's really lovely. Yeah. I remember when I first started volunteering at a market garden and they got me to do seed sowing, and I couldn't believe that would actually grow, because I thought I had that impact on that plant. Sowing,
that makes
being
so
the person
sense.
Sowing it would have a negative impact on it. And then they grew, and very quickly, and that lovely grower, a lovely guy called Jeremy down in Devon, was like, Hannah, you've got to learn, you put a seed in the ground and it grows. There's nothing you can do about it.
And it's not about your skill necessarily.
About you. And that's so much the case. Like, we are there trying to control the climate and the conditions and the and that's the interference, is the gardening bit.
But it's also the other thing we touched on before we were on mic earlier. We were talking about horticultural methods and practices and the advice that some of the experts can give. There's not one type of advice that works. It could be a range of different advice, but sometimes in horticulture it's always seen as unless you're doing it that way, you're going to fail. But again, it's variable, and so people panic as well. The beginners panic.
There is no one way to do anything. Every garden you visit,
but
everyone will have their own technique.
That and celebrate that sometimes.
And also be excited by it, because we get to constantly be excited by what other people do and how they do it.
Although frequently down the allotment, not my new allotment because that's ace, but where
trying
I
to be
was
smart
where
off.
I'm trying to be smart now, I'm not. Some people would come over to me and say, you don't want to do it like that, you want to do it like this, and I'd think, oh, you know, just just let me have a go.
It's that whole, you know, if you wind back to what we on episode one where we talked about garden snobbery.
I think I think this is going to work, and it worked. And you know, I can remember when I very first took my allotment on. I was the youngest, and I was female in an allotment that was mostly older men, and that's a fact. And I was kind of not accepted, I suppose, and what my methods were different, and there were some odd looks my way when I first, you know, took it over. And then I can remember at the end of my first season, I was backing onto a field, and somebody, another allotment owner, was walking down the field round the back. And he looked over at me and he went, "It seems you've done very well." I'll never forget it. And it was almost with gritted teeth, but he did say it, which is really nice. And I do things perhaps a bit differently to some on my allotment.
But different doesn't mean wrong.
Different isn't wrong.
No.
It was just different to perhaps what a certain generation has always done. There's new research, there's new techniques, there's new ways of doing things, there's different varieties.
You might find a new technique yourself.
Different cultivars. Well. Yeah, you might find that, and that's the key. You might find a way that works for you. And so why not do it that way?
And media is changing, you know. I love a good book, and I've got my Joy Larkham, and she's my guru for my techniques and what I do and how I do it. But I'm also watching YouTube videos, and I'm also on wonderful Facebook groups for UK market gardeners, and everybody's like asking each other, "Well, how do you do this?" and "What's the best way of this?"
Knowledge.
The sharing of knowledge is changing, and the supporting each other, and the farm tours, and the garden walks, and the you know, I mean,
Well, wonderful. That's so amazing. Wonderful. I think where can listeners find you online?
We've got a website, which is eveshillvegco.com. We've got a lovely Facebook page, which often has lots of photos of what we're doing, what's going on here. And then they can join us on a Wednesday here at the farm, which is north of Norwich. The last Saturday of every month, we have an open day, and people are welcome to come and have a look around and see what we do, get involved, find out how to get involved, come and see us, really. And then we're also helping a community centre in Reefham called the Burcham Centre to establish a centenary garden at the moment. So we're there on Mondays as well. So, and what's interesting about that is that's more kind of ornamental gardening. So for anybody who's more interested in that side of gardening and is a bit like, "Oh, I'd like to have a go, and I you know, I'd like a little bit of help, or I'd like to get some practical learning," that would be a great place to show up.
So there's loads of ways to connect.
She's so busy, and she's got a baby too. How do you do all of that? We thought we were busy.
Gloria has stayed quiet the whole time. She slept the whole time.
Isn't that amazing?
And I also noticed that as soon as we've come to the end of this podcast, it's got really quiet outside as well. So throughout the podcast, it's been raining on the polytunnel, obviously.
I think she's got some lavender planted near the baby.
Maybe
must
so,
be the
yeah,
case.
Just to, like,
she just really likes sleeping in the polytunnel. I don't know what it is, but
wonderful.
I might even have to wake her up because she's been asleep a bit long.
Yeah, let's go wake her up.
Thank you so much, Hannah. It's been really interesting. Thank you. I'm just going to slurp my chai latte now.
Okay, go on then.
In the same way that you slurp coffee. Ready?
That's not slurping.
I couldn't even do it.
Do you know?
You've got the knack of it.
I've told you guys before, since I've been spending a lot of time in China and like Japan, they do slurp their drinks and their ramen, their soups. And so when I have a hot drink here in the UK, I'm often slurping it and I forget who's around me. And I did it to you that time as well, didn't I?
I thought it was brilliant though. I can't even do it when I try. Anyway, let's talk about vegetables.
Yes, I can slurp vegetable soup.
You can slurp, depending where you are. Yes, you can.
Vegetables? What do you want to say about
you
vegetables?
You can't really be Ellen making Mary. Your own vegetable soup from veg grown on your allotment, you know?
You can't.
No, you can't beat it. It's the best.
Oh, can't beat it, right.
It's just the best.
I've never done it, but I've made my own soup from nettles.
Nettle soup.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
I've never had nettle soup. What is it like?
It's mostly potato and a few nettles. No, it's really nice, honestly. It's really, really good for you as well.
What kind of vegetable at the moment. Obviously, I've
what
start,
kind of vegetable
got this,
are you?
Well, yeah, if you could describe yourself as a which vegetable would you be?
Oh my god,
this is great.
Yes,
I hadn't thought about that.
I've got a friend who did a course, a business. Hang on, bear with me.
I am.
Who did a workshop, and they had to take the vegetable or fruit that most described their management style. And so he spoke to us the weekend before and was like, what should I take? I'm really confused. And then I worked out he should take a peach.
Okay.
Because right. He's hard on the inside, but he's got this soft, squidgy outside. So he kind of seems like he's friendly, okay. But he's still kind of strict in the middle. So, bearing this in mind, what vegetable are we? Vegetable or fruit?
Oh, this is difficult. Mm. I think... Am I going to say what I think you are? Or are
oh, I don't know. That might be
pick?
Too awkward.
I don't think...
I think you're a Jerusalem artichoke.
Oh, why?
You're all knobbly and it makes you fart. I've just laughed into your knee. Well, no, you have to choose for yourself. Otherwise, we're just going to be too nasty to each other.
I
choose your own vegetable.
I think I would be... I can't think. I would probably be a carrot.
Boring.
But
what colour? Orange one or a
red nice... one?
Oh, a cool one.
Or a purple one or a white one, but not an orange one.
Okay. Why a carrot then?
Because, like, I don't know. That's just the one I picked.
Is that because you got this really flamboyant kind of exterior on the top of the soil, but beneath the soil you go down pretty deep, and a lot of that is kind of like, you know,
I don't know,
hard and structured.
I don't know if I do go down deep, really. I'm one of those stunted carrots that comes out all wonky.
What's that called? Parmex, the variety.
That's me.
Oh, okay. What vegetable would I be? I don't know.
I think that you would be a Romanesco.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
All a bit exotic and alien-like. Yeah. Okay.
But tasty and nutritious.
And a little bit jaundiced. Yeah.
Anyway.
What veg are you growing on your allotment this season? Because this is National Garden Week episode, yes. So, you know, let's give us some inspiration. Give us some veg-spiration.
So this...
Melon.
Melon. Well, that's obviously Michael's nickname for me. If you didn't know that already, you do now. mine for him is peanut. So, the allotment that I've now got is much smaller than my other allotment, so I've had to be really... It's half an allotment. No, there's no Photoshop going on, believe me. I don't actually know how you use Photoshop.
Whatever.
I really don't. I've never used Photoshop. Yeah. Well, maybe in the past life. I've had to plan meticulously, and it's no dig this year as well, so in order to attempt to save myself some time. Mm-hmm. So I'm growing lots of vegetables, but only a small amount of each. Okay. And I've thought really long and hard
about... That's wise, though.
Yeah, really? I think so, because actually, whilst it's very nice if you get lots of veg and you get a glut and you can give it to friends or family or even the local food
bank... But gluts can be so irritating.
They can be, and actually it's only myself and my husband who I actually really need to feed, you know, and so I'm doing sort of one row, if you like, of almost every vegetable that I'm growing. So I've got a big salad bed, all kinds of different salads, but I really love colourful stuff. Mm. So I will pick beetroots and radishes and carrots that are all different colours. And then I've got cauliflower... Sprouts.
Isn't that a really long season?
It's a long season, but it's so satisfying. Kale, because I love kale. Mm-hmm. Eat lots and lots of kale. So that's lots cool. of brassicas.
Uh-huh. Can I just talk about cauliflower for a minute?
Yeah.
In Asia, they sell one which is almost like tender stem broccoli, but cauliflower version.
Okay.
So it's very kind of stringy, and it's really cool. You use it in stir fries. It's amazing. I wish that was on sale here. Yeah.
And I'm I am growing some runner beans, but I don't know why, because I don't actually like them that much. Oh. And you always get squillions of them when you don't need. So I've only got 4 runner bean plants, and they're actually mm-hmm. growing in a raised bed with other stuff. So I'm quite, everything's kind of compacted in mm-hmm. a lot. I have got carrots and parsnips, all of those kind of things as well.
My parsnips, greens, that's another one that I... Like, I haven't grown vegetables much since I was a teenager, but parsnips are to grow, aren't they?
If you've got...
It's a long season again,
it's a long season, yeah. But they last really well in the ground if you don't harvest them, okay. You know, straight away. And if you've got a nice soil, slightly sandy soil, like we have down our allotment, they grow into quite
You're lucky then, aren't you? Yeah.
Lucky, not so lucky, depending on what way you want to look at it. Hot, dry weather with the sandy soil is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that you can grow root crops quite well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got celeriac growing.
No way. Yeah, wow, celeriac, that's so cool.
Ace turnips.
How do you use it, may I ask? If it's not too personal a question.
You know, like a coleslaw? love it like that, kind that's of mixed cool.
in. I love celeria.
With other things like cabbages, stuff like just all chopped up. It's really so cool. yummy, so very raw.
I bought some from the Polish shop 2 days ago.
Right.
Not pickled, but just in brine.
Yeah.
Delicious.
The flavour is fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got a
but
big herb.
We don't eat it much in UK, do we?
We don't. Yeah. I think it's become a bit more popular now at certain restaurants. Do use it more for sure, but you can use it in soups and salads and all kinds of things. It has a lovely flavour and it's so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to grow celery. I've never had much success with celery, but I'm giving it a go because I have a celery juice every morning because good for your digestion.
It tastes horrible though.
It's not the best, but it's super good for digestion.
But celery, you have to earth it up, right?
You do, yeah.
You can do all of that.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I'd be doing all of that. The greenhouse is full. It's tomatoes, cucumbers, all of that kind of thing. Chilies, aubergines.
Which tomatoes? Sungold.
I am actually growing sungold.
They're delicious. I am well documented as hating tomatoes, but sungold I will eat happily. Fresh from the plant because they're so sweet and delicious.
The flavour is just totally superb, isn't it? I've got like a list of everything that I'm growing.
You're so square.
And then I am very square, but it's because it's so small, I've got to be so organised, more organised than usual.
Adorable.
Look, tomato sun gold. Mm-hmm. What else have I got? Oh, courgettes, obviously, because we all have to have some courgettes. I'm also doing buffalo steak tomatoes.
Oh, cool.
But I'm not growing them for red tomatoes. I'm growing them for green tomatoes.
Oh, for green tomato chutney?
Fried green tomatoes.
Wait, but isn't that a byproduct rather than an intention?
No, I'm going to harvest them before they've ripened, and then I'm going to have them for fried green tomatoes because my husband loves fried green tomatoes.
So what? It's just fried green tomato.
Yeah.
But it's with spices or what is it?
Yeah, you can spices or... Yeah, you can do whatever you want with it.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's amazing. It's fabulous. So I'm only growing them for that purpose.
Well, in what area does that sort of practice originate then?
Oh, it's Southern
fried
America.
Fried green tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's about, but yeah.
Southern America.
Aha.
So we were in... We were in Charlotte last year, North Carolina, and fried green tomatoes were everywhere.
Oh,
God,
I really
want to
try them.
Well, there
Where
you go.
Where can I get green tomatoes at this time of year?
Here in the summer.
imagine going to the shop and asking for green tomatoes.
everyone would be like, what
the hell? You moan that they're not ripe enough, and now you want green ones.
I know. Anyway, and onions, and what else will there be? All right.
I see a sneaky sunflower.
Sunflower? Where's the sunflower?
Bottom.
Oh, yeah, it was a potted sunflower.
Hey.
That's actually for my garden.
That's a cool sunflower as well.
There you go. But anyway, there's lots in a very small space.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Sweet corn as well.
Oh, yeah. I used to grow sweet corn.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever got the best crops off it, though.
I've only grown sweet corn twice. First year, brilliant, amazing, tasty, perfect. Second year, not so good. Mm. I don't know why. But I'm giving those a go as well.
I think, to be honest, and it'll be great if you can pull this off, because I think when I used to grow veg, I used to try and do too many things.
Yeah.
And there were too many things that needed different care in one space. And so it was then a nightmare. And I just remember it all becoming quite overgrown.
Yeah, I think it will be an interesting season, definitely.
But also, I mean, I've never worked on allotment, but when I had my house in Suffolk, I used to have a vegetable garden at the bottom of the garden. But having... something at the bottom of the garden, you're not necessarily going down there every day and giving it the care it should.
Mm.
How do you cope with an allotment? How do you know, you must have to be quite disciplined getting to the allotment.
Lots of people say to me, when I go there. Oh, your allotment looks really neat and tidy. Mm. You must be here every day. I don't have time to be there every day.
But your layout is tidy. You've got nice raised beds, the pathways.
Most important part, I think, of an allotment is planning it out in the first place. Mm-hmm. And almost like the hard landscaping. Having your paths ready, having your beds ready, and being able to rotate your planting. Okay. And having that structure then gives you the opportunity to care for it easier. So when I go to the allotment, I am on a mission. I have a list, I have my priorities, and I try, and it's not always possible, I try not to get distracted, because once you've done one job, there's always a million others. But I'm really strict with what I do when I go there, and because I might only have 2 hours on a Monday and 1 hour on a Saturday, you know, I don't know. If I can be down there longer, then I will, of course, but sometimes I can't go for a whole week.
Yeah. What about watering in summer? Is that not a recipe for disaster?
Watering has to happen. Yeah. I've actually never really had a problem with it. Lots of mulch, using straw. I use plant grow as well, so I have a really thick layer of mulch around all my plants, which helps to retain the water, especially in sandy soil, because obviously it just dries out so quickly. But like I said, this year will be a real test, I think, of that. But it's prioritising and planning and just doing little and often.
That's cool. I think.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, little and often is better.
Well, how impressive.
Well, we don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, but you've had allotments in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, little and often. Yeah. And sometimes it can get overwhelming. There's certain periods in the year, which is definitely spring, late spring, when all your seedlings are going crazy and you don't know what you're doing, and like there's seed traits
everywhere. And of course, we often talk about how competitive that can be online well. Like when I was growing seedlings when I was a kid, I didn't know what anybody else was growing. Like maybe my grandma was growing it, but we weren't competing. No. So.
You were focused on what you were growing. So
these days there's those added pressures to all areas of life, really.
Yeah, there is. And I think don't be pressured. You know what? If you forget...
Well, just don't show anyone else what you haven't
If you haven't sowed something, or you've forgotten to sow something, or those seeds haven't worked so well, don't worry about it. The world is not going to end.
Exactly.
Concentrate on all the other stuff that you've got to grow, you know? And don't worry about it. Just enjoy what you're doing. And it's really sad when you don't get the success of something that you're growing. And I know that. It's really disappointing. But don't worry about it. Just focus on the stuff that's growing really, really well.
Definitely.
You know? Wow. Just enjoy it.
So nice to have a bit of a veg chat with you.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. You Romanesco, you. I'm not growing any more of you, so they're not coming down this year.
I literally have no comeback.
The Plant-Based Podcast is sponsored by Sutton's, suppliers of gardeners' favourite products since 1806. Unsurprisingly, Sutton's now have everything you need for your outside space. Award-winning flower and vegetable plants, garden furniture and equipment, plus gifts for gardeners. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.